Mini episode 524 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
30 seconds.
In front of all these people, you're going to pull out a gun and you're going to shoot an unarmed man.
20 seconds.
So what are you going to do? 10.
Welcome to the FDH Lounge and the Justified episode recap.
It was justified.
With your original dignitaries.
Fire in the hole!
Rick Morris and Jason Jones.
You got ice cold water running through your veins.
Breaking down each Justified episode the moment they've concluded.
Did you take a peek inside the soul of Raymond Newton?
I'm just gonna let that old dog lie.
Real-time reactions. Next level analysis.
You seem to be harboring a bit of hostility there, brother.
So I've been told.
And now, your dignitaries.
Well, I believe we can take her from here.
Welcome, everybody, to mini episode 524 of the FDH Lounge. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris, here with FDH senior editor Jason Jones, and of course on all of these Justified reviews that we're doing, and we're about to start 6.6 right now. We are also representing not just another TVsite.com. Jason is one of the lead columnists and pretty much kind of the underboss over there, and I am specifically the Better Call Saul and Justified columnist. So if you love Better Call Saul, check out my reviews on the show and see what you think. And we have our review set to go for you here in real time, as per always, to get to what happened on this episode. And a lot of things happening, and the progression to the end of the season is unfolding in, I think, kind of an unpredictable kind of manner, because I've been thinking all along maybe we're going to build to a mid-season climax. And it doesn't look like that kind of episode is in the books. It looks like there's just going to be a series of things happening here, but it looks like the real barn burners are being saved for the end. I will be very interested to see what my man Jay Jones has to say about this, his thoughts. Jason, we definitely had some big things happening in 6.6 here watching this tonight. What were your thoughts on this one?
It felt a little disjointed in certain spots, but huge payoffs if you're weighing all of this on, you know, payment of what is expected. There were some really good big moments in this episode. But even the valleys of the peaks and valleys still felt like they were the breadcrumbs that'll lead to something else. I'm still at a loss on some of these things that I saw today. I'm not quite sure. Hopefully we'll break through it all. But, Avery threw a curveball today with Steam Version. The last 5 minutes alone made me have to pick up my job off the floor. So in that sense, it's a very good episode. I'm just not exactly sure that I have comprehended everything that happened.
And it's going to be very, I think, challenging to get through all the different kinds of threads that were happening. It was an episode, and I hear what you're saying. You know, parts of it kind of felt disjointed, and I feel a little bit kind of disoriented in the aftermath of it, because it feels like there was so much. And yet, this clearly was not an episode like Shot All to Hell last year, 5.5, where it was a culmination of a lot of things and then kind of a reset for the second half of the season. I don't think we're going to get that. I think it's going to be some things sort of getting resolved along the way, and some other things are actually being reopened along the way. There was a disproportionate amount of time tonight, I think, relative to what our expectations would have been in episode 6.6, which was named Alive Day. Let's go to what you referenced there, the part about Avery proposing to Catherine, and this whole thing sort of getting reopened, and even on the law enforcement side, in terms of who snitched out Catherine Hale's husband back in the day, he ended up dead. That was a conversation between Rachel and Art, and apparently Art had spent some time on that case, as had a very young Rachel at that point in time. So the whole thing here, I made a note immediately when Avery proposed to Catherine and dropped the whole note in there about, hey, you can tell me if you snitched on your husband. I had the thought immediately Avery might be playing some kind of a game here, that he's feeling out Catherine. He has a sense that she's playing a game on him, and he's trying to smoke her out. And that was certainly the suspicion of Wynn Duffy. And she said later on, if that's the case, he's going to die, and he's going to die slowly. What are your thoughts on the latest part of this whole cat and mouse game? I'm not even sure who's the cat and who's the mouse right now between Avery and Catherine.
Well, the first thing I want to mention is something that was started when I was recapping a different show last night. And I accept that it's the way things are done. However, I have a huge problem with this mentality, this criminal mentality that says, I'm going to try to burn you for every penny that you have. But as soon as I find out that you're trying to do the same to me, you're going to die a painful death. That makes no sense at all. The mentality just doesn't make any sense. If you're doing something wrong and someone's going to try and stop you or do that to you, you don't get to hit them harder. So it's a whole thing that comes with fictional drama television. But getting past the part of he's going to die a slow death, give me a break. You're trying to burn this guy. And if that is the game that's being played, somebody's going to win and somebody's going to lose. You don't get to go harder because you feel more offended that somebody's trying to do to you what you're doing to them anyway. But once we push that aside, if he's playing a game, as someone who spent a painstakingly long time putting together the best proposal I possibly could, I got to say, you're not really doing a great job selling it if the ring is just sitting on an end table. That's strike number one. And then the other thing is, there's got to be a game here. There has to be. There's no way that he just goes from, you know, a situation where it's like friends with benefits, and then all of a sudden, when all the stuff starts to fall apart around, you think, oh, I'm going to propose to this lady and at least figure out what's what. I think he may have tipped his hand a little bit prematurely, because there absolutely has to be something going on here. It can't just be this big bad pot baron from Colorado goes into Kentucky and finds out that he was deeply in love with this woman all along. It just can't be that cheesy.
Absolutely, yeah. I think there clearly is more than meets the eye to the whole thing. And him being, I think we have learned through the course of several weeks now with Avery Markham, taking this character at face value on any matters like this is very, very dangerous indeed. So he clearly must suspect that he is being suspected of having gotten Catherine's husband killed, and that Catherine is working a game on him. And I agree with you. This whole notion of, you know, they're all criminals and taking it more personally. This whole thing, too, of And I don't like in a lot of these instances, too, although I certainly demonstrated it with season five, if there's things I don't like, I will point it out. This almost, to me, gets to an issue of writing on this and the Catherine Hale character, and that maybe not ringing true. I understand that, you know, some of these characters, okay, they've got their own sort of peculiar code of ethics. Catherine seems to be a very cold, ruthless person who we saw last week. Okay, she appears to love her grandkids, but beyond that, not much sense that she doesn't have a very, very black heart beating in there. This notion that the husband that she cuckolded, apparently quite a great amount, she wants to avenge this. It's like, hey, you know, okay, I was out there cheating on him and taking it from other guys and everything like that, but that's just wrong that somebody double-crossed him on an even bigger level, and I want to avenge that. I'm sitting here scratching my head going, wait, what?
Yeah, and that really gets to the point here. And maybe it speaks to the mentality of a criminal in general, that you can actually rationalize that your wrong wasn't as big a deal, but somebody else's wrong absolutely needs to be met with brutal force. But to the point of her black heart. Am I alone in thinking that it can't, that maybe there's more to it than this? Is it really just revenge and that's the end game? It works. It's not out of the realm of possibility, but for me, final season, I just think it's too simple. And I'm kind of hoping there's a wrinkle somewhere along the way.
I agree, because I'm not buying revenge from Catherine, and if that's all it proves to be in the end, then I'm going to be sitting here kind of shrugging a little bit at Graham Yost and company and going, really, guys, really? Because, you know, I'm just – and that will hopefully in the big picture be a nitpick, and I suspect that it will be, because I suspect that they're setting up for a final run here that I'm really, really going to enjoy. I've really been enjoying it thus far. And it's been great actually getting to cover a season with you where we're not kind of scratching our heads as much as we were last year. It's great to be able to cover a season on more of a fanboy level, and I'm glad that they have accorded us the opportunity to do that. But having said that, yeah, in the end, if that's all it is with Catherine, if she, one of the big catalysts to this season, setting these forces in motion, Boyd v. Avery, it turns out just to be a thing of I want to get back at Avery because – he screwed over the husband that I screwed over in perhaps slightly lesser ways, then, you know, that's just not going to be the ring of truth for me. But the way that whole thing is going, it was good to get another Wynn Duffy appearance in there as Wynn was kind of questioning her about that. And that kind of drew out the whole thing about is Avery on the level? And they actually addressed the elephant in the room that was there based on Avery's reaction. And like you said, he might have tipped his hand a little bit with Catherine, it kind of seemed like. But these scenes were actually, again, they were clearly one of the more intriguing ones to us, but there was so much other stuff that was going on. The things that probably come to mind a little bit more, the major plots ended up being Boyd's crew down in the mines, getting a taste of that. Prior to that, good old Uncle Zach Randolph, in between working on his post moves, apparently, stopping over at Ava's house to talk to her a little bit and kind of go over some things with Boyd before they went to the mines. And Zach is proven to be an interesting guy, because once down in the mines, it ended up being a deal where Boyd needed to be rescued. He fell through and they pulled him out of there. But then towards the end, looks like old Uncle Zach gave a shove to one of the other guys and sent him down in there. And again, this being in real time, I was kind of having trouble picking up exactly what was happening here, but it seemed like the guy kind of found an advantageous angle for getting in there that maybe Zach wanted to take credit for himself. Was that basically, I think, what was going on, or was it something else?
You're actually hitting the nail square on the head of one of the things I referenced earlier about, I'm not exactly sure I've completely comprehended what happened, because the guy... The crew guy, it happened so fast, I don't even know that I recognized who he was, pointed out that one of the boards did not look like it was broken by rock. It looks like it was cut, like someone had been there before. Maybe it's marking something. Maybe Zachary's knew all about it or has hidden something down there. And the second he realized that guy identified that this was not a natural opening and that someone had cut the wood, it almost flipped the light switch, because he didn't hesitate very long. The very second the guy said, looks like it's been cut, and he kind of patted him on the back and said something, and then boom, guy's down the shaft. So I don't exactly know what happened there. I know that it revealed something about Zachary. And, you know, one of the crew members was, I guess, expendable. And then he acted it out as if it was some huge accident. But there's definitely something with Zachary that we either have missed, which is highly unlikely, or has yet
right.
to be revealed.
And I think that's it. We're clearly going to be learning more about that. And, again, there's a reason, folks. There's a very good reason they don't spend a whole lot of time doing character development on Boyd's various henchmen because they're not meant to be around long. A lot of them are disposable. You know, Jimmy was actually a guy that we got a little bit better feel for than some of the other ones, and he didn't make it past the final episode of last year. So these guys, you know, Boyd's going to be having to make another trip to Henchman RS, I guess, to replace that guy. meanwhile, you know, Boyd himself, now he wasn't there at the time because, again, you know, he had, I wouldn't exactly call it a freak out, but he clearly wasn't doing so well after having what, as he termed it, a near-death experience down there. Clearly, this is a high-stakes game being down there. And clearly, again, Boyd can't trust good old Uncle Zachary, whether he realizes it or not, now that one of his guys has bitten it at the hands of good old Zach Randolph. So we're going to have to see how that plays out. Meantime, and it's very, very interesting the way that it goes here. I think this was three episodes in a row now where it's been bookended by Ava and Boyd interactions at the beginning and at the end. And at the beginning, of course, Boyd pulls up, sees that Raylan is there, does not suspect anything at all along the lines of, you know, Ava being a snitch or anything like that. They have a little interaction. Raylan passes it off as, I want to talk to you, Boyd, and find out what you know about Dewey Crow. He's disappeared without a trace. Obviously, Raylan is not provided the truth here, which is that, unfortunately, poor old Dewey got capped by Boyd. And, again, they go their separate ways, and then at the end of the episode, it ends up being a deal where good old Limehouse calling up. You knew that was going to come back at some point here, too. It'll be very interesting to see how Limehouse justifies this, because this is a guy that's always styled himself as the protector of women and somebody who, again, took in the women of Harlan County when their men were abusing them. Now, again, getting paid for it and whatever. Limehouse is always looking out for Limehouse. So it's not that it was a selfless thing. And, again, maybe he looks a little cross-eyed at Ava, knowing how badly she wanted to kill what's-her-nuts, Ella May, to shut her up season four. So maybe he looks upon Ava as somebody that doesn't deserve his sympathy. But that was a hell of a moment there at the end, the beginning of the unraveling of Ava's identity as the informant. And Limehouse, who, you know, she clearly looks stupid to have trusted in retrospect, Limehouse being the one to tell Boyd all about it.
Real quick, let me back up before I jump into that point. As you were describing Boyd's crew and how they have a short shelf life, I couldn't help but have an image that somewhere in Kentucky there's a Home Depot with Boyd Crowder day laborers or something. getting to the Limehouse bit, and this is something that Justified pulls out periodically. We didn't get many of them last season. But seasons 2, 3, and 4 definitely had their fair share. Where the person in question doesn't even have to say anything yet. The fact that you saw Limehouse on the phone and knew that Boyd was on the other end, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but it's one of those moments where you inch forward in your seat and just think to yourself, oh, hell no. You saw that come in long before Limehouse actually divulged any information about whatever it was that he's referencing from Boyd's perspective of what Ava did yesterday. But there's a number of things that can come from this, and I guess the only question is Limehouse going to just let it all out, or is he just going to say, Ava came by to see me and you should keep your girl on a leash? I don't know what the situation is or what Limehouse is driving at, more importantly. What's this good friendship that they're trying to rekindle, or why is Limehouse trying to rekindle it at least? I mean, we could spend a whole show just on what is the motivation and the end game with Limehouse calling Boyd, but that was one of those moments in this episode where you had to sit back and go, okay, so that just happened. Now let's readjust everything, because now it's a whole new ball game. And then when you take that, combine it with the promo that they showed after the credits, let's just say, all shot to hell may be on the horizon in a season six sort of way.
Yeah, maybe, and maybe that'll be next week. And, yeah, the promo for 6.7 does indicate the aftermath of that conversation and that Boyd is on to Ava in some damaging way. Although it's funny, as you were saying that, it did occur to me that there are limits even to what Limehouse knows, because it's not like Ava volunteered to him and said, oh, by the way, the reason that my ass is in a big sling, Limehouse, is because I'm ratting on Boyd. So there are limits to what he knows. And it's interesting and it's instructive that he started the conversation in terms of, do you know where she was yesterday and what she was doing? Which, by the way, if he's referring to yesterday, that just backs up what I had read. This season really is going to be a super compressed time frame. I had read that this season takes place all within the course of a couple of weeks, and I can very well believe that based on the way that it's going, particularly if you have two consecutive calendar days serving as episodes unto themselves. So it would then become a matter of, and it's funny too, you know, the phrase comes to mind, you know, the old Richard Nixon phrase during Watergate about as far as what to cop to publicly when details started coming out, and the phrase modified limited hangout, as far as just like, you know, we'll tell a story that's part of the story and it's a less damaging part, and hopefully that will suffice. So you got to think that's Ava's starting point, because Limehouse doesn't know. Again, this occurred to me, you know, only as you were speaking there. I was like, wait a minute. He doesn't know the full story. He doesn't know she's ratting on Boyd. So she's going to figure out what Limehouse knows, what Limehouse told Boyd, or she may be confronted with it. And then it becomes a matter of how does she protect her ass from there. Become a matter of tell Boyd the full truth. Throw yourself on his mercy and maybe look for a way of like, hey, look, Boyd, maybe we can use this to manipulate Rail and feed him false information or whatever. Or does Ava try to go the modified limited hangout route to where there's still going to be something over her head, but Boyd knows she's not trustworthy from what she's told him?
Yeah, it's an interesting idea, Rick. And I'm going to kind of take it the other way. We know what Limehouse knows, or at least we think we know what he knows, in that Ava was coming to get free passage the heck out of Dodge. Now, unless I'm missing something, that is the length and width of what he knows.
Yep.
Now, the question is that enough to get Boyd's wheels turning? If Limehouse just says, your girl came to me trying to get the heck out of here safely and was willing to pay X amount, is that enough for Boyd to start connecting dots or getting suspicious? Because still, even through 6.6, we still are all operating under the premise that the squirrely little corrections officer guy just had a change of heart, which is just not very realistic. So
right.
I'm thinking that no matter how big or small Limehouse's information for Boyd is, it may very rapidly in an avalanche sort of manner lead to Boyd connecting dots, whether they're truthful or not. And that's a little bit of what we saw in the promo for next week, and that when he's on screen with Ava in next episode, he does not look pleased on any level. So I don't know how bad it gets or how fast it gets that way, but I find it hard to believe that on any level that Boyd's not going to take that and run with it.
Well, and the other thing too, again, I'll mention this. I think it's fair to get into a spoiler from Breaking Bad for how long the thing's been off the air. And by the way, it's a common sense thing too. Most people who watch Breaking Bad understand that at some point Hank is going to piece it together about Walt. I don't think I'm telling it. I don't think there's anybody out there going, wait a minute. I thought maybe he'd get through the whole last season and nobody'd ever find out. No, you always knew there was going to be a crossing the Rubicon moment. And it's interesting because, and I used that same phrase, ironically, in my write-up for this week's A Better Call Saul. There was a moment in there where it looked like the young Jimmy McGill had sort of crossed the Rubicon and accepted that he was going to become Saul Goodman, this flashy con man lawyer, a criminal lawyer who is actually a criminal. This concept of crossing the Rubicon, it's a familiar kind of a thing. And with Boyd, the biggest obstacle to figuring out what's going on is he can't believe it about Ava. Ava is perfect in his eyes. But it's a matter of once somebody points him in that direction, once somebody essentially removes that obstacle and lets him see it clearly, then he can begin to connect the dots. And you got to think, too, he's going to be thinking about her real squirrely behavior when she first got out of prison that he ascribed at the time to just some sort of post-traumatic stress syndrome or whatever it was. So you're absolutely right about connecting the dots, Jason, because he just needs a shove, and he needs a strong shove because, again, the extent to which he cannot perceive her that way. The minute that he begins to conceive that she could do that, yeah, I think the whole thing's up for grabs once his wheels start turning.
And, you know, and this is also going to dramatically affect a theory that I've had all along the way and just haven't seen any hints to it, so I kind of let it go. I was wondering if there was a potential that Ava would almost confide in Boyd and say, listen, here's what's happening. Here's how I got out. Here's the circumstance. Now, I'm with you, so the best course of action here is to start feeding the marshal's office real tangible stuff so that they can compile this RICO case, and then at the most opportune time, we make our escape. I don't think that can happen if Boyd is the one that breaches this conversation to Ava and not the other way around.
You're right. You're absolutely right. She missed her window. And it's interesting because I remember we kind of speculated about it earlier in the season in terms of Ava and her options and everything like that. You know, might it go that way? But at the end of the day, Ava's a girl with some street smarts, but I don't think she was quite resourceful enough to try to figure out that kind of an angle to it. And plus, when she first got out, I think she was still noncommittal about getting back together with Boyd, and I think she really only has gotten back together with Boyd sort of under duress. It's not that there's been no sign that she's rediscovered her old feelings for him. She remembers that he last year, at a certain point in time, stopped doing what it took in terms of her welfare behind bars there and kind of left her on her own after he initially was, trying to do what he could. But he got so distracted by all of the myriad season five issues, Mexico, the heroin, et cetera, that she ended up being left on her own. The other angle tonight, and this is probably the A plot of the episode, and it's actually taken us about two-thirds of the time here to get to the A plot. There was so much that was going on, but the unraveling of what happened last week, the consequences of Calhoun being accidentally killed by Choo-Choo during what was supposed to be an interrogation about what information he had fed. So it ends up being a disposal of Calhoun's body that was entirely half-assed, you have to say. It took law enforcement no time to get to that, and that put Raylan and Tim on the case and kind of pulling the threads there the rest of the episode. They were able to cause a little bit of havoc in Avery's camp by being the ones to tell Avery about Calhoun's death. You could kind of tell he was caught by surprise, and there was probably an oh crap moment for Ty as he's standing there watching it happen. It then becomes a matter of Avery saying to Ty, you got to do what you got to do. And the fact that these guys were ex-special forces, as they said, in the sandbox together over there. I don't know if this was Iraq, Afghanistan, or both. But ultimately, it seemed like Ty had come around to, I got to do what I got to do, because Choo-Choo didn't want to follow through with killing this girl. Out of the three of them there, Choo-Choo, Seabass, and Ty, it's clear to tell that Choo-Choo's got the best heart of the three by far, even if that is kind of grating on the curve. And then the final showdown out there in the woods, where Raylan and Tim were going to try and take them without a any kind of effort there. They end up drawing the guns, and even Choo Choo, after being told what he was told by Raylan and Tim, ends up sticking with them. The one thing I want to ask you about, and where I'll ask you to start your kind of breakdown and analysis of that, what you texted me there at the end, when Choo Choo tried to get himself killed on the railroad tracks, but the car stopped short, were you hinting at what I thought? Was Choo Choo already dead when the guy got to the window?
Yeah, well, yes, he was. That's not necessarily why I sent that, but yeah.
Okay.
Choo Choo basically timed the light just right so that as the train, I actually said out loud to my wife, "Would you look at this? Choo Choo is going out the way he takes other people out at the hand of a train." but yeah, he timed the light just right so he get between the guardrails there. And he was alive when the train's coming, but by the time the train actually got to a stop, he was dead. Anyway, so
from his wounds from having been shot. Okay.
Yeah, I think he just bled out while he was driving, and then just
bled out. Okay. That was what I thought happened, but as far as that whole sequence of events. Of how it culminated to that. Take it away on the parts that you think are the most noteworthy, what led up to it, and where you think it may be going now with this incredible manhunt that's going to be underway.
Well, my first thought, the reason I sent the message was, I guess in a way, I just wasn't ready for Choo-Choo to die yet. He's one of those guys you kind of pull for. It's not his fault that he's the way he is. And, yeah, there's something to his moral compass or, you know, his inner heart or whatever, that's a little sympathetic. But that whole situation with the girl, I understand that the criminal element doesn't like loose ends, so you got to get rid of this one witness so that they couldn't be tied to the realtor. But just feels like the beginning thread getting pulled on for the sweater to unravel. Even in that firefight, you know, they're trying to tell Choo Choo that this is wrong, and I guess it goes back to Ty's hesitation not 10 minutes earlier, where he tells the story about what he and Choo Choo had been through, and that he wouldn't compromise the situation because they've been through so much, and maybe that's why Choo Choo wasn't willing to listen to Raylan and Gutterson, was that there's some sort of deep-rooted loyalty there that can't be compromised. Now, what followed is just a cluster F of massive proportions here, because with Ty in the wind, Choo-Choo's dead now, and then that leaves Avery needing to distance himself from his own crew. So,
right.
There's any number of ways this goes, but just from the looks of it, when Ty pulled away, unless he's a lot more resourceful than I'm giving him credit for, I don't think Ty lives much further past this episode upcoming.
Well, I had a thought about that, and that is I wonder how much they're going to. I don't know if you remember this from being in the news a couple of years ago, but, I mean, it was a years-long thing, this Eric Rudolph manhunt. The guy who, it turns out, was the bomber, I believe, at the 96 Atlanta Olympics, subsequently had a bombing or two at some abortion clinics in the southeast, and then disappeared into the hills. Now, this guy, to my knowledge, wasn't a military guy, special forces, anything like that. He was a wannabe. He was a militia guy, et cetera, et cetera. But the same kind of a deal of, you know, whole thing of, like, everyone was looking for him, but it was a thing of, like, better be careful once we get up on him, because if he's waiting for us, there may be some bad stuff coming our way. And it seemed like Tim and Rachel and Raylan were kind of talking about that and hinting at it a little bit at the end about the law enforcement guys. Yeah, there's going to be a heavy presence down in the hills, but they may be target practice for these guys, and that kind of a sense, too. So the manhunt angle of this thing which, you know, we've seen at some points in the past on the show, but it usually gets short-circuited. Robert Quarles wasn't a fugitive for very long, whatever. I'm wondering if it could be a multi-episode arc, potentially with Ty and Seabass on the run, or maybe it does wrap up quickly. I could see that going either way.
You know, now that you say it, yeah. We're roughly at the halfway point, and there has to be
six out of 13, yep.
Yeah, there has to be some vehicle that gets us from here to there. And this may have something major to do with it. And the question I would then throw out is, if the marshal's office and subsequent other law enforcement agencies are preoccupied with a manhunt to find Ty, and Boyd's got his own issues to deal with Ava, but can seize the opportunity, it seems like there might be room there for Boyd's whole plan to access from underneath the pizza shop, that maybe there's something there and an opportunity to have two completely separate storylines dominate the next few episodes, so that when the dust settles on whatever this is, then we still have that triangle of Boyd, Avery, Raylan. And then that sort of simplifies things a little bit. And then at some point, we're just going to have to ride it out and see exactly how it ends. But at some point, all of this commotion has to settle back down to at least Avery, Boyd, Raylan, if not just Boyd and Raylan, which is what we've been hammering the whole time.
Well, it's weird, too. And the last thing I want to mention to you is I almost got kind of a vibe in watching this. Have you ever seen the old movie Bullet? 1968 classic with Steve McQueen. Excellent movie. I first looked it up after seeing the car chase scenes on YouTube. That was sort of the originator of great car chase scenes. And an unbelievable detective story that went with it. Very good. But there's some things that happen along the way, and I won't spoil it out there for you or anybody else, but of where, you know, like one scene where somebody dies and they were critical to what seemed like the plot going through, and it was just kind of like, wait a minute, that wasn't supposed to happen. Like, I know in a macro sense it did, because that's the way they wrote it, but of where the whole thing of writing something where something happens that seems like it was going to disrupt the way that the rest of it was going to play out. And I almost kind of got a sense of that tonight, of like, we thought we saw where things were going, and now it's kind of getting chaotic, because in the midst of this final three-way conflagration that seems to be coming, now Ava's been compromised. Now Ty is on the run with Seabass, and Choo-Choo's dead, and so Avery's going to be kind of with his thumb up his ass because of what's going on there with his crew. So it almost seems like there was a lot of chaos interjected into this, and clearly it was deliberately. I mean, the writers know what they're doing here, but I almost got that whole kind of sense here, you know. Sometimes, like when it's very convincing in pro wrestling, you're like, hey, wait a minute, that wasn't supposed to happen. Of course it always is. But those are the best moments, are the moments where it seems like the logical flow has been disrupted by chaos.
Yeah, there's a little chaos theory mixed in with magician's misdirection here.
Yes.
And that's the beauty of it, is I would love to sit here and tell you emphatically that this is what's going to happen. But the fact of the matter is, as loyal, justified viewers, we know better. And that's part of the joy is watching it unfold. And we saw that tonight in a series of different moments where, like, as we're talking about the Ty thing with Choo-Choo, I wasn't sold one way or the other that the plan was to take Choo-Choo out. I thought that maybe it would go another way, and that's the fun of it. So I can't wait to see exactly what happens in the next episode, the next two episodes, and how that affects 6.13.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing getting from here to there. But again, we didn't have tonight, and again, I don't know if we're going to have one single episode that's like 5.5 shot all to hell. It looks clear that it's going to be dispersed into several episodes, and with some calmer moments in between during those episodes. But I almost feel like, you know, this is the biggest sort of haze I think I've been in since reviewing that one with you. Of just, it gets done like, wow, there was just so much to talk about and so many different things that happened and so many unexpected things. So, you know, I think a real treat that we got here tonight. It looks like the next couple are going to be the same way, and one would think all the way to the finish line with only seven left. So I got to imagine you're as excited as I am at this point.
Oh, without question. And, you know, for me, some of it is just not knowing. I'm giving myself over to the Justified writing team and just letting them take it wherever they want to take it and feeling confident that I'll be satisfied one way or the other.
I think so. I think that's very safe on your part and on my part. It's going to end up in a good place, an exciting, satisfying place, I think, for all of us. How we get from here to there in the last seven episodes of the series is really going to be something to behold. Thank you again, Jason, tonight for another tremendous show with me here. And, again, thank you all, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini-episode number 524.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classics, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.